Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carr has done that a lot this year. He's been very slow to process what's in front of him defensively. He's checking it. You know, there was a quote from one of the Jaguars defenders that he's just going to check down all night long. We know who he is. And that's kind of what's happening with him. You know, I'm sure some of that is him kind of feeling pressure in the offensive line not holding up. And so he's speeding up his process and making mistakes because of it. But Carr has started 150 games in the NFL at this point. He's too experienced to be making these kinds of rookie mistakes. And he's not playing like a veteran quarterback. He's playing like a rookie who hasn't done it before. And that's not what the Saints paid for. That's not what they expect out of him. And he has got to step it up for them to get where they want to go this season.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome into the show. Ryan O'Leary here, joined as always by my buddy John Ziegler. It's the Saints Wire podcast, brought to you by the USA Today Network and available wherever you get your pods. Please subscribe, tell a friend, leave a review, all that good stuff. That's how you can support us, and we appreciate you. How you doing this week, John?
Oh, man, I've been a little bit under the weather, but hey, these things happen. It's that time of the year, and we just got to overcome this adversity. So look, we're here to break down some Saints football and take a look at what's coming up for them next.
Yeah, this is more of like a seasonal cold thing, John, and not a Saints cold. The Saints aren't giving you these flu-like symptoms.
Man, I hope that's the case, yes.
Yeah, so maybe a little bit of a rough week for John. He's on the mend, but a rough week for Chris Olave too, John. Maybe that's where we should start. You know, not only is the Saints' number one receiver catching some heat for, I guess, dogging on routes during the games, which we could get to. There's a lot of people dropping some hot takes on that, but Olave was also arrested Monday night in Kenner, Louisiana, on suspicion of reckless driving of a motor vehicle. The police said that he was going 70 in a 35 mile per hour zone, and that his Dodge Charger was observed traveling at a high rate of speed, recklessly maneuvering between lanes and around other drivers on the roadway. That's according to a report by ESPN. So just not a great week for Chris Olave, John. What's your leadoff thought on that?
Yeah, man, the vibes could not be worse right now. And some of that's on him. You know, look, man, you shouldn't be doubling the speed limit in a residential area. I don't know if people know the area where he got pulled over, but I mean, it's a residential street around a bunch of apartments and houses along a canal in New Orleans. You don't want to be doing 70 there. That was just a bad decision on his part. But as far as what's going on the field, man, it's been rough. It's been a rough week. There's been a lot of speculation, a lot of slander, a lot of chatter about him. You know, it doesn't help that he's been thrown under the bus a bit by Derek Carr to an extent. and his coaches, it's been rough, you know. And you know, obviously there are some effort level concerns there with him not finishing routes and maybe not competing for catches. But at the end of the day, I'm like, he's never had these problems before. You know, he didn't have these struggles with Andy Dalton throwing to him, or Jameis Winston, or JT Barrett, or you know, Justin Fields, or any of his quarterbacks at Ohio State. Like, he's been a very consistent performer throughout his football career. So I'm kind of looking at Derek Carr sideways a bit here. Like, what are you doing differently that is impacting Olave's game so negatively? Like what's going on here? So I'm sure there's a lot going on behind the scenes that we're not going to ever hear about. But it is concerning to see, you know, someone who was such a, you know, had such a successful rookie season, had so much, you know, momentum going through the summer, to kind of be struggling right now. So hopefully he levels out here in this game against the Colts on Sunday.
The reckless driving thing, John, hopefully that's just an isolated thing. Like, he was rushing to get somewhere. What'd you say before we hit record? Just jump in here. He was rushing home from CVS or something. Had to pick up a prescription or something.
Yeah, that's what his brother said. He said, man, he's just coming home from CVS. It's no big deal. And I'm like, buddy, it doesn't matter where he's coming home from if he's doing 70 and a 35. Like that is besides the point right here.
Yeah, and weaving around other drivers, like the police report says. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he was just in a rush to get somewhere. or maybe he's been seeing the press clippings a little bit coming off this Jacksonville game, John, and he's blowing off a little steam. You know, maybe it's one of those things. Whatever it is, the Saints need to get to him, right? They got to get his head screwed on straight. They got to make sure he's good. They got to make sure him and the quarterback are good, because if they're going to have any chance of getting where they want to go this year, they need Chris Olave, right? He's a major part of the process of the Saints trying to win, what, 6 or 7 of these next 10 games to stay in it and make the playoffs. So they need Chris Olave, right? I mean, that's not really dropping a hot take. All the hot takes are coming from the on-field stuff. The visual that we saw during that fourth quarter of the Thursday night game, John, in Jacksonville, 3rd and 5, the Saints drew up a play for Carr's new favorite weapon, Taysom Hill, which we'll get to here in a minute. But it's a play that's been broken down by many at this point and confirmed by Dennis Allen and Michael Thomas, right? So it's like we're talking fact, not opinion here, that the play was designed for Olave to run really fast down the sideline so his defender would kind of be taken out of the play and not peel off and take away Carr's first read, which was Taysom Hill on a little 7-yard out route on 3rd and 5, right? Olave didn't run really fast, and the broadcast not only caught Derek Carr going nuts on Olave after he chucked the ball out of bounds, but I think Kirk Herbstreit on the broadcast even said that it looked like Olave, quote, gave up on the route. So there's been a lot of chatter about this specific play. What was your take on that specific play, John? You know, the route that Olave ran, the reaction to it, Derek Carr flipping out. Like, what'd you think about that whole thing, that whole mess that's gotten a ton of run since that game?
Man, it was a fiasco. But to me, the best explanation comes from Michael Thomas. He talked about it on the site formerly known as Twitter. He said, look, the progression here, Olave was never even in the progression on this play. That ball was never going to him. The progression was 7-22-13, meaning Taysom Hill was the first read on the play, who was running an out route, which Olave was supposed to clear out for him. But because Olave didn't run his route to the appropriate depth, Hill didn't get open, Carr threw the ball away. And that's where Michael Thomas said that that's where things went wrong here. Carr was supposed to look off of Taysom whenever he wasn't open there, and then go to Shahid on the left in the slot on the left side of the field, and then look to Michael Thomas on the far left down the boundary. And Carr didn't do that, and he didn't go through his reads. He didn't process what was in front of him, and he threw a bad ball and wasted a play in a pretty critical junction in this game. And Carr has done that a lot this year. He's been very slow to process what's in front of him defensively. He's checking it. You know, there was a quote from one of the Jaguars defenders that he's just going to check down all night long. We know who he is, and that's kind of what's happening with him. You know, I'm sure some of that is him kind of feeling pressure in the offensive line not holding up, and so he's speeding up his process and making mistakes because of it. But Carr has started 150 games in the NFL at this point. He's too experienced to be making these kinds of rookie mistakes, and he's not playing like a veteran quarterback. He's playing like a rookie who hasn't done it before, and that's not what the Saints paid for. That's not what they expect out of him, and he has got to step it up for them to get where they want to go this season.
Yeah, I really love that take on Carr, because it's something we talked about a little bit last week on the show as well, right? Him just kind of bailing on plays, and he did it on that fourth down play against Houston last week where he was looking for Michael Thomas on a slant. It wasn't there, so he just immediately bailed on the play and threw it to Alvin Kamara 5 yards behind the sticks, turned a 4th and 4 into a 4th and 9 or 10 because Alvin Kamara catches the ball 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And it wasn't like there was a defender about to blast him. He just didn't have his first read, so he just completely bailed on the play and quickly just chucked it over to Kamara. So, yeah, I think that's a really good take, and people aren't really criticizing Carr too much for that play or his reaction to it. I think bringing up Michael Thomas's reaction to is interesting, because Michael Thomas, of all people, defending Olave on Twitter or X or whatever it is now, John, I noticed you've refused to even say X, which, good for you. I'm with you on that. You know, Michael Thomas coming out and defending Olave and breaking down that play on social media there. Olave is literally the receiver the Saints moved up and drafted to be their next go-to guy, the guy that Michael Thomas used to be before all his injury problems, right? And Michael Thomas is defending that player. I found that to be kind of cool. Never mind the fact that Derek Carr himself said that he needs to chill out himself. He's saying me, Derek Carr needs to chill out. And then Dennis Allen basically talking about it as well. So it's crazy. I know. It just feels to me, I know you've broken this down, that the Saints have larger issues on offense than Chris Olave, right? Actually, I've heard you break down stuff on the Saints a ton over the last few years, especially this season. You've broken down the big issues. You've talked about the front office. You've talked about the head coach. You've talked about the assistant coaches and the players. I've never once heard you, John, say anything remotely close to Chris Olave is a problem on this team, or Chris Olave is Brandon Cooks now, or Chris Olave isn't trying hard. So I just wanted to get your take, because I trust your opinion on this stuff. You don't have a problem with Olave, even though there are some plays that are questionable out there that we're seeing on social. You're not worried about this player's effort out there. You don't think he's dogging it.
No, man. I think he would be performing at a much higher level with better quarterback play, with better play calling. Because, you know, and I feel this way about all receivers, like no position in the NFL is impacted more greatly by forces outside their control than wide receivers, because they need someone to, you know, draw up the routes and tell them where to go on the field, and they need someone else to throw the ball to them. And if either one of those factors are out of sync, then it's going to look bad for them, and they're the one who's going to catch a lot of the blame for it. And I mean, look, that was true with Brandon Cooks when he was here too. And so I think some of that's going on with Olave. You know, I really hope that the Saints get on track, that Carr does a better job getting him the football, that the Saints do a better job putting him in position. Right now they're just wasting a lot of resources and, you know, wasting a lot of time with just poor execution.
All right. Well, we talked about the play in question that's gotten all the run, that third down and five pass that wasn't supposed to go to Taysom Hill. And that brings us to Taysom Hill, John, this is just for me. I find this fascinating. Maybe this is a fantasy football question. I don't know. I don't want it to be. I want it to be a Saints question. But he's kind of the hottest fantasy waiver wire pickup right now, because he's been targeted 13 times and he's caught 11 balls for 100 yards over the last two games, Taysom Hill, right? And just for context, Taysom was targeted 13 times all of last season. And his 19 targets and 15 catches this year are on pace to like just completely shatter his career high of 22 targets and 19 catches. That was way back in 2019. Obviously, that was over a 16-game season. Taysom's numbers this year, that's left less than half the game. So they are targeting Taysom Hill. He is a factor in the passing game the last 2 weeks, John, with Juwan Johnson out. What do you think about this? When you think about this, Taysom Hill in the actual tight end role, it's actually been kind of productive. I don't know if it's been counterproductive at times, in your opinion. Like, what do you think about the way they're using Taysom Hill? Do you think this is sustainable? And Juwan Johnson sounds like he's getting close to coming back. So what changes with Taysom Hill in this new tight end role, this new receiving role he's found himself in?
Yeah, I do think that Taysom's usage as a receiver is going down once Juwan Johnson is back in the offense. But this was something that the Saints talked about all summer, is that, hey, we want to emphasize Taysom's skills as a receiver, and we want him to get more targets, catch more passes, and make more plays through the air than he has done in recent years. And right now, he's got 115. He's got 15 catches for 115 receiving yards. Those are both, you know, his highest totals as a receiver in a season since 2019. And so certainly they're giving him every opportunity. They're throwing to him often. They're in some pretty high stakes moments, yes. Which is an interesting decision given everybody else you've got it who can catch passes in this offense. But certainly that has been a point they're emphasizing. You know, I expect him to, you know, see a reduction in targets once Juwan Johnson is back. He's somebody that I have very high hopes for. That the Saints had very high hopes for over the summer. Derek Carr was talking about Juwan Johnson like he was Darren Waller at times in training camp, as far as being that big athletic tight end that he loves to work with. And they haven't had him with that calf injury. So Juwan Johnson is supposed to come back here against the Colts. And I think he should make a big make a big impact on the offense. So Taysom's not going anywhere, but I would expect to see fewer targets for him.
Okay, so that's not good for the fantasy footballers, me, who picked him up and want to start Taysom now at tight end. But I did start him this past week for some reason, so that was a great
Then you lucked out, because the Saints finally remembered they can use him as a runner in the red zone, and hey, he scored a touchdown.
We got a touchdown on a fourth down, baby. I'll take it. Yeah,
right. There's an idea. Maybe they can use Taysom Hill at what he's best at. Who knows?
Oh, you're sick of them ramming Alvin Kamara into the line? It's not working.
Yeah, just sending AK into the teeth of the defense yeah. for 2 yards in a cloud of dust. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you
very entertaining.
Very entertaining. Well, Taysom is entertaining when they get him the ball. I'll give him that. But maybe, you know, going back to that conversation about Chris Olave, when maybe him not being super happy on a route where he's supposed to clear it out for Taysom Hill to go get the big catch on third down. Maybe Olave wants right. that ball. I don't know. That's just a conversation for another day, John. But after this game against the Colts, which we're going to break down here coming up next, the Saints are going to find themselves at the trade deadline next week. What do you think about the Saints at the deadline? I mean, they're in an interesting spot. There's 10 games left, John, like we said. I don't know how many games they need to win to stay in this thing. Probably at least 6. That gets in the 9-8, right? 7 gets you to 10. That's you're probably feeling pretty good about a playoff berth there if you're 10-7. But what do you think the Saints do at the deadline? Do you think they're going to go trying, you know, do they go all out? Is Dennis Allen trying to go get pieces to try to make a run at this thing? Do the Saints believe they have a chance to go compete for a Super Bowl this year? Certainly doesn't look like it right now on the field, but maybe they have other ideas. Buyers or sellers at the deadline? What do you think?
Yeah, I think they'll be buyers, if anything. That's just kind of been their MO. They've acquired a lot of players at or near the deadline in recent years. You know, the guys that come to mind are Quan Alexander, Eli Apple. They made a run at Emmanuel Sanders, got outbid, wound up signing him as a free agent a couple months later. So they are always looking to add someone here. But I don't think this is going to be a very busy trade deadline for the Saints. They're not positioned to really, you know, make a strong offer and add anyone. They don't have a lot of draft picks right now in the 2024 draft. Yeah, they have some comp picks, you know, coming through the pipeline, but you can't, you know, you don't get those until March. They're not awarded until March, so you can't trade them right now. But so don't even think about that right now. So they're short on draft capital. You know, financially, they've got about almost $5 million in cap space, so that they can fit a lot of players under the cap. And you can always work a deal with the other team to have them pay, you know, a portion of the salary to make it work. If they were to trade anyone, I would look in the secondary, and I think it would have to take a good offer. And the one player that kind of jumps out to me would be Marcus May, starting free safety. Trading him right now wouldn't save much money against the cap this season, but it would save, you know, $7 million next year by taking his base salary off the books and putting it on a new team. So they could save a lot of money next year. They could open a spot in the starting lineup for, you know, the rookie Jordan Howden, who played really well in May's absence for a couple of games earlier this season. So we just saw Kevin Byard got traded for two late round picks and a player from the Titans to the Eagles earlier this week. If a team came to the Saints and made a similar offer, I think that could make sense, especially if they could add a player at a position of need, like, you know, like the offensive line, like defensive tackle, you know, so something like that. So I'm not really holding my breath on any moves here, but that is one that would make sense to me.
But for the record, you don't want to do any deals with Howie, right? Just let him do his thing over there with Philly.
No. if they get a phone call from a Philadelphia area code, don't even answer it. Don't even pick up the phone. Just keep it moving.
All right, we'll have to see what the Saints end up doing at the trade deadline, and maybe this game against the Colts will influence that a little bit. Saints are 3-4, so are the Colts. We'll get into that one here coming up next. But first, our friend Corey Bonini from thehuddle.com, he's going to tell us, hopefully, whether we should start Taysom Hill or not this week. I need to know that. Here's Corey and with some fantasy advice for week 8, and then John and I will be right back.
Corey Bonini here with thehuddle.com to bring you fantasy football strong plays for week 8. Quarterback Derek Carr, New Orleans Saints at Indianapolis Colts. Even though he has just one multiple touchdown game in 2023, he has gone over 300 yards in each of the last two contests. Indy has allowed the 13th most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks. But that number is depressed from facing Cleveland and Tennessee. 4 QBs have posted at least 21 fantasy points versus Indy this year, and Carr has the weaponry to make it 5. Running back Raheem Mostert, Miami Dolphins at New England Patriots. Mostert rocked New England in week 2 when the Pats heavily focused on keeping Tyreek Hill from owning them. In that first meeting, Mostert rushed 18 times for 121 yards and scored twice. The Pats have surrendered totally neutral ground numbers since that game, and the majority of success against them has come via the passing game. Even after last week's flop, Mostert still played far too well to be left on your bench. Make sure to lock him into all lineups. Wide receiver Gabe Davis, Buffalo Bills versus Tampa Bay Buccaneers. After a month of strong play, Davis has turned in consecutive fantasy flops. The Buccaneers present a matchup that profiles well for volume, but not so much for big play types like Davis. That said, it's tough to run on Tampa, tight ends rarely fare well, and this defense will have all it can do to slow Stephon Diggs. We like Davis's odds for getting into the end zone this week, and he's a pretty safe bet for at least 15 fantasy points. Tight end Jake Ferguson, Dallas Cowboys versus Los Angeles Rams. Ferguson comes off of his bye for a matchup with a top 10 opponent in terms of ease of exploitation, and he deserves a lineup spot in all weekly formats. The Rams have allowed 3 touchdowns to the position and 13.7 points per game in PPR on the year. But the kicker is that all of those scores have come in the last 5 weeks. This is the second best yardage matchup since week 2's conclusion. Ferguson really could challenge for a top 5 spot this week in fantasy scoring. For more award-winning fantasy football news, tips, and advice, please be sure to check out thehuddle.com.
All right, we're back. The Saints are going to face the Indianapolis Colts this Sunday on the road, Lucas Oil Stadium. What do you think? Who scares you more right now, Derek Carr or Gardner Minshew? Are you a member of Minshew Mania? Are you a card-holding member?
Oh, man. No, I'm not a Minshew disciple. He's a fun personality, but he's a very limited quarterback, and the Saints have kind of beaten the snot out of him in a couple of games before, so I'm not too worried about Minshew.
Well, the Colts are coming off this wild game. That was probably the craziest game of the weekend, John, right? That Colts-Browns game, where everything I was reading was that was going to be a low-scoring game, bet the under, 38-33, crazy game. The Colts, they blew that game, right? They ended up losing it. So what's kind of your take on this team, this Colts team? They're a hard one to read, kind of like the Saints, right? The Colts are a tough team to read. Some games they look good, some games they look like crap. What's your kind of your leadoff thought on the matchup, Saints-Colts?
Yeah, man, this Colts team is fighting hard. They're competing hard each week. But look, at the end of the day, they've lost their last two in a row, you know, three out of their last 4. They don't have Anthony Richardson. They're down, you know, one of their best defenders in Grover Stewart, the big defensive tackle. I'm not too worried about this Colts team, and this is a game that the Saints should win. They should go into that stadium and kind of impose their will a bit here on what should be a vulnerable run defense and get out with a win. That's how this ought to go down. Now, is that going to happen? Who knows? Dennis Allen's team has not, you know, met expectations in that regard. You know, they've lost games that they should have won this year. That's been a recurring issue for them, and I can totally see this being an upset loss. You know, personally, I'm predicting a win. I'm not intimidated by Minshew. You know, we've seen the Saints, you know, just intercept him, sack him, defeat him repeatedly as a starter, whenever they've crossed paths, you know, with the Eagles late last year, with the Jaguars before that. He's not a QB who should threaten this defense. The question, as it seems to be every week, is will the Saints offense be able to score enough points? And kicking a bunch of field goals probably will not get it done this week, just like it hasn't gotten it done, you know, in most of their games this season. So they have got to show us that this offense can end drives with touchdowns, that they can convert third downs and do the kind of things that a competent offense is expected to each week. So that's what it's going to come down to. And, you know, hopefully with the extra rest after that Thursday night game, maybe they can change some things up, try out some new things offensively, get guys in position. Here's an idea. Maybe they could activate A.T. Perry instead of Keith Kirkwood and Lynn Bowden, who are kind of just kicking it there at the bottom of the receiver's depth chart. So, man, they've got to introduce some new factors. They've got to do some things differently. And, man, it's just frustrating to watch. Hopefully this can be an entertaining game on Sunday.
Yeah, got to start on time. Start playing with the lead again, right? I mean, it's just these games where they're behind early and trying to play catch up. It's just a brutal way to go. So the spread in this one, John, from what I'm seeing, it's the Saints are a 1-point dog, probably because they're on the road here. So it sounds like to me like you're backing the Saints. That's where I'm leaning as well. The Saints have not been good against the spread this year, though. They're 1-5-1 against the spread on the season. So if you've been betting the Saints all year, you have not been doing well. John, you've kind of been picking against the Saints quite a bit this year. So I'll give you credit for that. But this the Saints getting a point on the road against the Colts, you're feeling pretty comfortable about that one.
Yeah, I think this Colts team is going down. The Saints should be able to do enough to put them away to, you know, contain Minshew mania and get out with a win. So I'm expecting the Saints to win this week. What goes on after that, we'll see. But yep. To me, this looks like a win on paper.
Hopefully they get a win, get to 500, and we can talk about a path to the playoffs. You know, that'll be it. But it'll be play the Colts, and then we'll see what happens on the deadline, John. So we'll be busy next week when we break this one down. But Saints and Colts, as John kind of alluded to earlier, they faced off five times since 2007, including a Super Bowl. Remember that one, John? Saints Colts in the Super Bowl. And the Saints are 4-1 in those games.
That kind of memorable game.
Yeah, I'd say so. Saints are 4-1 in those games since 2007 against the Colts, and they've also covered the spread four times out of those five. So if you're believing that kind of thing, then let's go with the Saints. But it feels like a good bounce back spot for them. John, anything you're working on special for Saints Wire that folks should be looking out for?
Yeah, man. Look, we're previewing this Colts game, kind of recapping the season thus far, and you know, prepping for a trade deadline. You know, it's not looking like it'll be super active for the Saints, but you always want to be on your toes and kind of keep an eye out for what moves might be coming down the pipeline.
Saints Wire's got you covered right up until kickoff and beyond. Make sure you're checking out John and his team stuff. It's among the best in the business. Excellent. And for John, I'm Ryan O'Leary. Thanks for joining us this week on the pod. Like we said earlier, we appreciate you, and we hope you stick around all season and subscribe and tell a friend. We'll catch you next week.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.